This entire first hour is devoted to two new friends of mine, Kelsey and Andrew McClellan, who came to Chicago from Colorado and are doing, to my mind, what is one of the most fascinating, creative, artful jobs you could even think of, because most people couldn't even think of it unless they're like 90 years old. So I used to do that. Hi.
Hi.
Hey there.
You two came from Colorado, and we've talked before. I've been up to your headquarters, so to speak. These two are modern sign painters.
Yes.
Is that a suitable definition?
Yeah, we call ourselves sign painters.
And how did you... I want to get back. I've asked you a million questions before this, but when you were both young in Colorado, when did art enter your life, your lives?
Well, when I was little, my dad's mother, my grandma, was a painter. And so she had this wonderful art studio in her home up in Evergreen, Colorado. And so ever since I was little, we would go over there and paint and draw. And she had every art supply you could imagine.
Oh, how great.
And so that, I think, just got me started.
And how about you?
And for me, really young, my father's a musician, so my parents are hippies, so they were open to me being an artist. And one of my great uncles was a scenic painter for the Works Progress Administration.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up like knowing that. He painted all the dioramas in the National History Museum in Denver, which is really cool. And so I remember being a kid and seeing those and being told about that, and so I kind of understood that.
So there's nothing, you know, one of the things that's always bugged me is that kids are introduced to art, many of them, and not so much anymore, but when they're really little.
Yeah.
And then as they're learning to express themselves with art, they're told, oh, no, put that color between these lines and put that color between these lines. In the same way kids are turned off to poetry by having to memorize it at 4 years old. you two are no intimidation by art. Actually, you grew up with an affection for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we were encouraged to be artistic, both of us.
And express yourselves in that fashion.
Yeah.
So you both grow up, you both go to high school, you both decide that you want to be paint. Did you both decide you wanted to be visual artists or just study it at first?
I thought it was not a real career. I tried everything to not be an artist. I decided I'd study anthropology, and I was interested in other... I was like, well, maybe I'll be an art historian.
Sure, sure.
And I got sucked in.
And you?
And for me, I knew I wanted to somehow make a career out of art. I didn't know exactly what that was going to look like, but when I started college, it was in the painting and drawing program at the University of Colorado, Denver.
And then the fateful meeting of the two of you. You guys met and fell in love.
Yeah, in art class, much to the chagrin of our art teacher, who's an awesome teacher. She still is teaching there. But the story goes, we were in a sculpture class. We had to do a casting project. And I had basically foraged all of these wild mushrooms.
Sure.
There was like a rain the night before and there were all these mushrooms. So I came in with boxes and boxes. He showed up with nothing.
I had forgot about the project.
And I said, hey, do you want to help me? And then we just kept working together after that.
Wow, that's great. And and was it an immediate kind of, you know, defining and expressing love is a very difficult thing. You obviously sensed in one another something special that had to do with art. I mean, that's kind of one of the foundations of your mutual affection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We started making art together, that project with the mushrooms. She was already, at a young age, well-connected to the art scene in Denver, and we had a show with these mushrooms that were cast in aluminum, and we sold almost all of them.
Wow.
Made a pretty good amount of money from the project, and this is when we were both very broke. And so we were like, wow, this really works.
this is a career. This is a career. Well, you obviously had a great ambition, too, to come to the School of the Art Institute. You wanted to pursue, and the School of the Art Institute is among, if not the most prestigious, and good.
Yeah, it's a great school.
Following things. So you came to Chicago.
Yeah, we applied and were rejected many times. So we kept applying. And
from the school? From our Institute?
Yeah, from lots of schools. We just kept applying. We got into a school in New York, and then we got into here, and we visited, and they kind of encouraged us, and we decided to come here.
And after a year, you ran out of money.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. We're art school dropouts.
but you had by that time developed a serious affection for Chicago, had you not?
We certainly had.
Why?
Well, our studios were right on Michigan Avenue, right across from the museum. And one of the things we noticed straight away when we were here were all the gold leaf signs all around the city, especially around the Loop. And this is something that we just had not been exposed to before. We hadn't seen these in Colorado, although I think there might be a couple ghosty gold leaf signs there. There really isn't anything to speak of. And we saw all these gold signs, and here we are in a graduate program for painting, thinking we knew quite a lot about painting.
Yeah, but
and
nothing about
we
that.
We could not for the life of us figure out how these amazing gold signs were made.
But before we take a break, can you describe to me... This is tough. What those signs and seeing those signs did to you intellectually, and obviously it hits you in a sort of passion place, but what did it do to you? Did you see them as a possible challenge for the two of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were fascinated with how you could achieve reflective gold, and... we were just determined to learn it.
Wow. So you moved here. You weren't in school anymore. And how did you... Well, let's take a break.
Okay.
Because you're here all hour. We will be back with these two wonderful people, Andrew and Kelsey McClellan. And they are sign painters. If you've just been listening, they're a little more than sign painters. But that's what we call them. And that's what they call themselves. And we'll be back in about 2 or 3 minutes. I'm back on with Kelsey and Andrew McClellan. If you listened last week, you heard Jim Kudol talk about these two, lavishly talk about him. We'll talk about him later. This is the reason I met you. This is how we met. And it's quite a crowd, the three of you. I'm just saying the three of you and your cute little doggy. You got to Chicago. You decided to stay here. And you really sort of dive into the whole, what's left of the sign painting world. You had no idea the place Chicago once played in sign painting.
No, yeah, we weren't aware of the history at that point. And essentially, downtown, you would see ghost signs.
Sure, sure.
There were quite a few gold leaf signs still.
Hmm.
And then, of course, there's amazing neon signs, some of which are still there. So compared to Colorado, the signs were still pretty dynamic, and it seemed like it was active here.
When you finally did, I'll jump ahead a little, when you finally did start to get some knowledge about this, I'm going to call it artistic subculture, you found out that people stopped doing this in like the 70s when it became better to do vinyl nonsense and do that. You met some people, though, who had done this, and they further inspired you, yeah?
Yeah. There was a little signature under one of the gold leaf signs, and I looked it up, and it said Chicagold, and... it was a company ran by Robert Fries,
mm-hmm.
who is probably the reason why Chicago still has gold leaf signs now. He, for the last 45 years, continued to do gold leaf signs when many people were no longer doing it. And he's kept the tradition going. He's maintained many of the buildings downtown. And so when we reached out to him, it was perfect timing because he was close to retirement. He had never taught anyone. We really got along. And he slowly, you know, passed on his knowledge.
Wow. Why do you think he was a sort of lone wolf in this kind of thing? Was it too difficult for people? Were there not charming mentors for this? Or in classic fashion, oh man, this is a new thing. This is the easy thing, that people were not attracted to it?
I think there's a handful of reasons. One of the big ones was, like you had mentioned, the vinyl signs. The Gerber plotter came out in the late 80s, and that really decimated the hand-painted sign industry. It just took it out because everyone was worried about being left behind, and so they all bought these machines, which were incredibly expensive at the time. And the other problem that this created was people who had no design sensibilities, people who had never made a sign before in their life, could buy one of these signs and type in what they wanted it to say, print it out, and all of a sudden you're a sign maker.
Oh, wow.
And so that had a huge part to do with it. And then another big issue was a lot of the old timers older than him, like that generation, one more back, they were incredibly secretive. And so they wouldn't even amongst each other share the trade secrets.
Wow.
And so I think
And they weren't going to share it with some 20-year-old
who came
in and said, teach me, teach me.
So I think that played a role also.
Did you discover, when you were discovering, did you discover that there were other oases of these in other cities where people were, maybe again, lone wolves, were practicing this vanished art before it became extinct?
Yeah, when we started, we were fortunate that social media was kind of jump-starting.
Right, right.
So we were able to connect to a whole community online.
And was there a community?
There was. There essentially was a... there's been a few, I would call them renaissance of the movement. One that started in the early 80s when the previous generation of sign painters kind of, you know, disappeared. They were getting laid off and the sign industry completely changed. There were a group of young sign painters in Denver, ironically.
Oh, really?
That started a movement called the Letterheads. And they came together and intentionally taught one another the practice and
wow.
shared techniques and knowledge about the craft.
And that was all Denver, Colorado folks as you were, that was all news to you, right?
Well, by the time we had grown up, it was gone from Denver because the vinyl part of the sign business is so aggressive and it essentially just pushed everyone out of the industry. And however, they continued to go, and many of these people still paint signs. And our generation, for some reason, there was actually one reason. There was a book that came out about in 2011?
Yeah.
About sign painters. It was a book and a documentary. And that inspired a whole new generation, of which we're part of that generation.
You had started a business by this point, right?
Yeah. We kind of like were going.
Because one doesn't make a lot of money in learning and exploring the past.
You know? No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. You don't come home and say, instead of coming home and saying, hey, I got us a job, it's, hey, I learned about another sign painter from Chicago.
Yeah.
How was that? I mean, were people. What was your first job?
Do
you remember?
Well, for a long time, we continued to hold like 9-to-5s while we started.
Sure.
For a really long time. Until we felt like we could jump into it full time. And one of our first clients, we actually ran into them downtown today. they own a bar in Blue Island. And he worked with Andrew at Whole Foods when he was working there. And he left. He started the bar. He knew we were doing this, so he gave us a chance.
What do you think it is about, you know, you two are charming, delightful people, but what do you think it is motivates someone to want a hand-painted sign?
I think there's a lot of different reasons that someone might want one, but I think a big thing is kind of wanting to express a level of authenticity with your business that you can't really get with a channel letter sign or a vinyl sign. I think something hand-lettered, something made by hand, definitely gives that aura of just character.
It gives an aura of sincerity.
Yeah. Sure.
It gives an aura of being genuine.
Yeah.
You think?
Totally.
And it really means you want to stay. You're here for the long run. It's not owned by a private equity firm and you're going to go when you're not making enough money for your shareholders. You're part of the community and you want to be there.
Wow. How many signs have you, and I'm saying using the word sign is a big, big umbrella here. How many have you painted?
Oh, man.
In the last decade?
Oh. I mean,
hundreds?
Hundreds and hundreds.
Thousands?
Yeah. It could be 1,000. That's possible for sure. Yeah.
I want to talk after the news and talk about, I'm fascinated by the collaborate. This is you are collaborating artists, I feel. I don't know if someone can come to you, if I could come to you and say, yeah, I want you to say Rick Kogan on this window.
Uh-huh.
And I want it in blue and yellow and make it this big. You know, and then you would just go and do that. I think there's got to be a conversation about it. You know, we don't like the name Kogan. G's are hard for us. Blue and gold, that's terrible. That's a terrible idea. That's got to be one of the joys, too, is that this is an artistic collaboration. No matter, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, it is.
Definitely. Yeah, it's, you know, there's kind of three factors. There's what the client wants and what they think it should be. There's what the actual business is, what the place is, and what is going to work best for them. And then what we think is going to look best, what we would want to do for our own taste. So it's kind of finding a balance between those three things.
Those must be fascinating conversations.
Yes.
And there must be also a conversation about, like, now how much is this going to cost? You don't have to do that with me because I'm not putting the name Rick Kogan on any glass in any glass that I can think of. This is just charming. How many years have you formally been in business now in Chicago? It's got to be around
12 10, years.
12 years.
Yeah.
And you were happier each year with business than you were the previous year.
Totally.
That's great. I think it's time to take a break. So we will take a break for news, and the three of us will take deep breaths and relax, and we'll carry on with these two fabulous people. If you want to check this out during the news, not that it's not newsworthy, it's probably all about the Pope, ChicagoSignPainters.com will give you a little more insight. And then go to Field Notes and make Jim Kudel richer than he already is. We'll be back. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. I am back here with Kelsey and Andrew McClellan and talking about signs. We're talking about painting signs. It was a vanishing art. And these two are dedicated to kind of the historic techniques that were, and I know the WGN audience is of a certain age, and I'm sure many of you remember signs from your youth that you saw on the side of a building, that you saw in the window of a bar. And there was something very special about them. And I think that they, in a crackpot Kogan theory, that they made a more solid impression in people's psyche and brain and memories than many things you might see now. So someone thinks, ooh, this is a really flashy sign, and it just goes in one eye and out your ear, and you forget all about it. What is the biggest project that you've had? And the most paint, for instance?
We've painted roofs of warehouses, which is, how many gallons?
100.
To what end? Gallons. Someone would call and say, I want the roof of my warehouse painted with.
Generally, it's like a large logo that we'll paint.
Okay.
So it to be seen from planes or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you find, though? What do you two find, and what have you found, the most challenging aspect of what you do?
Probably work-life balance is probably the most challenging part. We love what we do. We love everything about it. We love working. We get a lot of satisfaction from it. We love making our clients happy. We love expressing ourselves creatively, pushing our craft as much as we can. So we tend to work every day.
Yeah.
So I think taking time off, we're not the best at. I'd say that's the hardest part.
Now, this isn't like time off, but this is also like a job.
This is definitely day off.
This is also like a job. I don't care how good the view is. It's like work. Explain to the listening public, who I'm sure is bringing up questions like, okay, what is the difference between sign painting and murals and graffiti? Because they all involve affixing paint paint to structures and to places and to people. Is there a difference, or is it just slight variations in one's judgment and indeed talent of doing it?
Well, there are a lot of similarities. But with sign painting, there is, I guess, a rubric of how to organize type and understanding of letter forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so that applies itself in all types of circumstances. So sign painters are focused primarily on working with letters.
Yeah.
Graffiti is, I guess,
it's self. It's certainly self-expression.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it can be haphazard. It can be unfocused, and it can be done by people with as much artistic talent as me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would call sign painting a commercial art.
Yeah.
So we may be different from the other two art forms. We're always working with the client.
See, I seriously consider it art, but popes 1,000 years ago they were the clients, and
right,
they said,
right,
paint my face. How do people find you?
A lot of folks find us from word of mouth. I'd say probably 50% is word of mouth would be my guess, and then also, social media has really been huge for us.
I'm sure.
Many, many clients.
Is that how Jim Codal of, you can go, ladies and gentlemen, to fieldnote.com, because there is a wonderful collaboration going on. They may have sold out, frankly. I think they have.
Yeah,
I think they have, but you can still see them. How did that business come together?
So we wrote a book.
Which I bought, and it's a beautiful,
yes.
It's a beautiful book. We'll talk.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the book. We'll get to Jim before the show's over.
we did a presentation about the book at it's called Ways Goose. It's a big gathering of type enthusiasts who focus on letterpress.
Mm-hmm.
In Hamilton, Wisconsin. Type Museum in
Two Rivers,
Wisconsin. Brian, who works with Jim, happened to be there and happened to see our presentation. So that led to the field notes. But
Beverly, talk about the book. The book is beautiful. The whole story is beautiful.
I'll tell you the story. So in the summer of 2022, there was a building set for demolition in the Ravenswood neighborhood. And in the middle of the night, they took down the siding of the building because it had asbestos. And they didn't want to deal with the city. And, what happened was these two beautiful, completely well-preserved signs were revealed. One was from 1920. It was a shell sign. Mm. And the other was a 1930s bread sign. So a friend said, hey, you got to go look at this. We ran over there, and we were like, oh, my gosh. We were completely enamored and in love, and we decided to save the signs. We saved the signs. What, the bread sign was signed by Jack Briggs.
Yep.
Jack Briggs started Beverly Sign Co., and that led us to a collection of original sign sketches from Beverly Sign Co. that had been miraculously saved by a young journeyman sign painter when his union foreman said, get rid of these, throw them out. He said, can I keep them? And he said, I don't care what you do, get them out of here.
Wow.
And he kept them for the last 60, 70 years. And so
he must have been thrilled.
Yes.
To have met you when you came to him saying, do you have any signs? Basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So one of the designers, his name was Ken Millar.
Mm-hmm.
He taught a lot of sign painters in the Chicago area, and everybody loved him. He was super creative, probably one of the best talents of his time. And one of his mentees, Bob Bohonek, had this collection, and Ken's dream was to make a book.
Mm.
So Bob said, hey, I have these. Do you think we can make the book? And Ken had been turned down over and over and over again because nobody was making books anymore.
Of course.
And, they said, make a blog, make...
Yeah, right, right. Make a blog.
Put it on
a
website.
A Facebook page, yeah.
Make a Facebook. And for some reason, it just worked out. And Ken knew about the book, and he knew it was going to be made before he passed.
Hmm.
It was like a month before he had passed away.
Oh, wow.
So it was really special, and it's great that Bob was a huge part of it. And really, this whole group of sign painters that are still here, and, you know, they paint signs for fun now, but they are real excited and just thrilled.
It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book. And you can get it just once again. Go to ChicagoSignPainters.com, and you can learn more about these two and the whole world of sign painting. You have attracted, I think, and Chicago used to be, and I don't know if that plays anything into it, Chicago really used to be the hotbed of sign painting, that people would come here in the teens, 20s, and 30s to learn to paint signs and then go back to wherever they lived. I think it's only fitting that you're doing this here, don't you? You must have more than he already is. We'll be back. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. I am back here with Kelsey and Andrew McClellan, and talking about signs. We're talking about painting signs. It was a vanishing art, and these two are dedicated to kind of the historic techniques that were, and I know the WGN audience is of a certain age, and I'm sure many of you remember signs from your youth that you saw on the side of a building, that you saw in the window of a bar. And there was something very special about them, and I think that they, in a crackpot Kogan theory, that they made a more solid impression in people's psyche and brain and memories than many things you might see now. So someone thinks, ooh, this is a really flashy sign, and it just goes in one eye and out your ear, and you forget all about it. What is the biggest project that you've had? And the most paint, for instance.
We've painted roofs of warehouses, which is, how many gallons?
Oh, 100.
To what end? Gallons. Someone would call and say, I want the roof of my warehouse painted with?
Generally, it's like a large logo that we'll paint.
Okay.
So it to be seen from planes or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
what do you find, though? What do you two find And what have you found the most challenging aspect of what you do?
Probably work-life balance is probably the most challenging part. We love what we do. We love everything about it. We love working. We get a lot of satisfaction from it. We love making our clients happy. We love expressing ourselves creatively, pushing our craft as much as we can. So we tend to work every day.
Yeah,
but so I think taking time off, we're not the best at. I'd say that's the hardest part.
Now, this isn't like time off, but this is also like a job.
This is definitely a day off.
This is also like a job. I don't care how good the view is. It's like work. Explain to the listening public, who I'm sure is bringing up questions like, okay, what is the difference between sign painting and murals and graffiti? Because they all involve affixing paint or, paint to structures and to places and to people. Is there a difference, or is it just slight variations in one's judgment and indeed talent of doing it?
Well, there are a lot of similarities, but with sign painting, there is, I guess, a rubric of how to organize type and understanding of letter forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so that applies itself in all types of circumstances. So sign painters are focused primarily on working with letters.
Yeah.
Graffiti is, I guess,
it's certainly self-expression.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it can be haphazard, it can be unfocused, and it can be done by people with as much artistic talent as me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would call sign painting a commercial art.
Yeah.
So we may be different from the other two art forms. We're always working with the client.
See, I seriously consider it art. But, we're popes 2,000 years ago. They were the clients. And
right,
they said,
right, yeah.
Paint my face. How do people find you?
A lot of folks find us from word of mouth. I'd say probably 50% is word of mouth would be my guess. And then also, social media has really been huge for us.
Sure, I'm sure.
Many, many clients.
Is that how
media.
Jim Codal of you can go, ladies and gentlemen, to fieldnote.com, because there is a wonderful collaboration going on. They may have sold out, frankly. I think they have.
Yeah, I think they have,
but you can still see them. How did that business come together?
So we wrote a book.
Which I bought, and it's a beautiful,
yes.
It's a beautiful book. We'll talk.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the book. We'll get to Jim before the show's over.
we did a presentation about the book at it's called Ways Goose. It's a big gathering of type enthusiasts who focus on letterpress.
Mm-hmm.
In Hamilton, Wisconsin. Type Museum in
Two Rivers.
Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Brian, who works with Jim, happened to be there and happened to see our presentation. So that led to the field notes. But
Beverly, talk about the book. The book is beautiful. The whole story is beautiful.
I'll tell you the story. So in the summer of 2022, there was a building set for demolition in the Ravenswood neighborhood. And in the middle of the night, they took down the siding of the building because it had asbestos. And they didn't want to deal with the city. And, what happened was these two beautiful, completely well-preserved signs were revealed. One was from 1920. It was a shell sign.
Mm.
And the other was a 1930s bread sign. So a friend said, hey, you got to go look at this. We ran over there, and we were like, oh, my gosh. We were completely enamored and in love, and we decided to save the signs. We saved the signs. The bread sign was signed by Jack Briggs.
Yep.
Jack Briggs started Beverly Sign Co., and that led us to a collection of original sign sketches from Beverly Sign Co. that had been miraculously saved by a young journeyman sign painter when his union foreman said, "Get rid of these, throw them out." He said, "Can I keep them?" And he said, "I don't care what you do, get them out of here."
Wow.
And he kept them for the last 60, 70 years. And so
he must have been thrilled.
Yes.
To have met you when you came to him saying, "Do you have any signs?" Basically, right?
Yeah. So one of the designers, his name was Ken Millar.
Mm-hmm.
He taught a lot of sign painters in the Chicago area, and everybody loved him. He was super creative, probably one of the best talents of his time. And one of his mentees, Bob Bohonek, had this collection, and Ken's dream was to make a book.
Mm.
So Bob said, "Hey, I have these. Do you think we can make the book?" And Ken had been turned down over and over and over again because nobody was making books anymore.
Of course.
And, you know, they said, make a blog, make...
Yeah, right. Make a blog.
Put it on
a
website.
Facebook page. Yeah.
Make a Facebook. And for some reason, it just worked out. And Ken knew about the book, and he knew it was going to be made before he passed.
Hmm.
It was like a month before he had passed away.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty special, and it's great that Bob was a huge part of it. And really, this whole group of sign painters that are still here, and, you know, they paint signs for fun now, but they are real excited and just thrilled.
It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book. And you can get it just once again. Go to ChicagoSignPainters.com, and you can learn more about these two and the whole world of sign painting. You have attracted, I think, and Chicago used to be, and I don't know if that plays anything into it, Chicago really used to be the hotbed of sign painting, that people would come here in the teens, 20s, and 30s to learn to paint signs and then go back to wherever they lived. I think it's only fitting that you're doing this here, don't you? You must have. You liked him.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
He was awesome.